today's episode. They're thinking about expanding the college basketball tournament. Oh, no. They're thinking about expanding the football playoff. It ain't even started. Plus, maggots on a plane.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
That argument is garbage. That's just someone thought that little PR move up. Do not fall for it. It has nothing to do with the percentage.
Russ Dellinger.
So you got these two things going on. You've got fights between. There's a little different dynamics, but in general, it's the same. Access and money, right? Everybody wants more access and more money.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Perhaps the most insulting thing yet out of all the insults that College Sports Incorporated hands down to the fans, because find me the fans that want a bigger tournament. Find them. Show them to me.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Time of year when people start, prepping for March, prepping for the men's basketball tournament, March Madness, or the women's basketball tournament, although it's pretty easy to predict who makes the Final Four in that one. It's usually like seven teams that got a shot. It hurts the brackets. But men's basketball this year could be the craziest we've seen, and we had San Diego State and Florida Atlantic make it last year. So it's total chaos, and that is what we tend to like about March Madness. It is the perfect, I think, sports entertainment property. Not the most popular. Obviously, that's the NFL, other sports. But it is the perfect construct. Three consecutive weeks with three different elements to it that all mesh together. Generally speaking, you have the, I refuse to recognize whatever happens at Dayton. I may not even recognize that Dayton exists.
Uh-oh, now we're going to war with Dayton. Oh, my God. Here we go.
Fine town. I'd be amiss now.
Warped Wing Brewery. It's good.
The Warped Wing Brewery. Underrated city, Dayton. Underrated city is one way to put it. No, Dayton's fine. University of Dayton Arena's fine. But the action starts on Thursday, and you have the chaos of all these games, and you have these upsets, and you have these schools you never heard of, and you find out, you start trying to jog your geographic memory. Do we have a state named Murray? We have a Murray state. What is this? I didn't even know about this state. All the things go on. And then you get through that. It's very exciting. 3-4 days. And then you get to the next weekend where it kind of gets sorted out. And legacies are made and legends are made. And you get to the Final Four, where generally speaking, the Dukes and Carolinas and Kentuckys and Arizona's or whatever, they duke it out. UConn, and you figure out who the champ is. And it takes 3 weeks, and it's got enough momentum and it's brief enough that everyone follows along, and the ratings are terrific. And it is a cultural phenomenon. It is a truly American creation and an important one. And in those kind of, for a lot of the country, as spring starts coming, this is this big thing. Kind of takes you from the end of winter into spring in a lot of places. And everyone likes it, especially when the local team gets going. And it could be the local team anywhere. As such, it being the perfect construct of a sports and entertainment property and a properly sized reality show and an enduring, iconic spot on the American sports calendar, college sports wants to screw with it.
Of course. It's Ross what Dellinger, they do.
It is what they do. Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. In a meeting in Washington, D.C. on December 25th, our own Ross Dellinger, crack reporter, ace reporter, Yahoo Sports, right, commissioners of the SEC, Big 10, ACC, Big 12, and yes, even the Pac-12/2 or whatever the heck it is, open dialogue with NCAA President Charlie Baker about their wish to examine NCAA tournament expansion. Separately, the football people in Dallas are already talking about expanding a playoff that hasn't actually
even formally expanded. Yet. Yeah, right.
Ross, tell me they're not going to do this. Just feed me lies. Yeah.
Well, sure. If you want lies, then no, it's never going to happen, Dan. And the 68 teams will stay that way forever, permanently.
Thank you.
If you want the truth, it feels pretty inevitable that at some point we're going to have changes to the tournament. And let me start with, that meeting 3 weeks ago. You know, we talked about it a lot on the pod. It was a pretty big meeting. I wrote a story a day before the meeting, kind of prepping it. It was with Charlie Baker, the NCAA president. It was with the five, as you mentioned, the five commissioners. Their general counsels, I believe, were up here too. Bunch of lawyers were up here with them. It was a big powwow. Multiple things were addressed in the meeting. It was up here in Washington, D.C. But one of them was the Power Five commissioners' wishes to expand, to have more access to the tournament, for their teams to have more access to the tournament. I think Brett Yormark summed it up quite nicely summed up their perspective quite nicely in a quote saying, "We need the best teams to be competing in the tournament, and I don't think all the best teams are competing in the tournament," is how he put it. And you could certainly argue with that, right? But that's how he put it. That's his stance. That's their stance. And there's two things going on here, right? There's access to the tournament. I think there's 34 or there are 36 at-large spots.
32.
But I thought they, with the first four, I thought they maybe added two or four at-large extra.
There's 32 conferences.
Right, 32 so AQs,
36.
But there's 36 at-large.
Oh, right. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, no, yeah. I misheard you there.
Yeah, just the at-large we're looking at. So there's access. So there's gripes about that they want that at-large pool to expand. In order to expand that at-large pool of 36, right, you got to either add teams to the tournament and go beyond 68, which could complicate the calendar and schedule and all that. That's already pretty crammed up. Or you have to take away at automatic qualifiers, some of the 32 automatic qualifiers for some of these small conferences, which is probably would end in political backlash, I would imagine.
Probably.
You're screaming to Congress for help. This would probably not help that. So what do you do? You know, the easy option is just to add to the field. And they want to do this, right? The last 3 to 5 years, I think we've talked about this a little bit, but, you know, the power leagues are running the sport. I mean, they're running the NCAA in a lot of ways. They're influencing it. They want this. They've made it very clear to Charlie Baker that they want it. So I think it's in the early stages of happening. I think eventually it does happen, and we get some kind of modification, whether it's to the AQs or just adding at large. There's almost certainly going to be a modification to the NCAA tournament.
I feel sure is going to happen. I go back in August of 2022. I sat down with Sankey and he broached this subject. I wrote about it then, and basically what Sankey wants, Sankey tends to get. And he said then that they needed a bigger tournament. He pointed to the fact that Ole Miss won the baseball tournament that June as the last team in the field. And, well, if that can happen in baseball, then maybe we're leaving out a potential national champion in basketball. Yeah. This is garbage. It's sacrilege. It would be perhaps the most insulting thing yet out of all the insults that College Sports Incorporated hands down to the fans. Because find me the fans that want a bigger tournament. Find them. Show them to me. The conference commissioners want it. The athletic directors want it. The coaches want it. Nobody else wants it. The fans don't want more of it. It's perfect, as Dan said, as it is. This is like, you know, Led Zeppelin writes Stairway to Heaven, and somebody says, well, if we'd add a little ukulele in here, we might bring in a little bigger audience over here. Prince writes Purple Rain, and somebody says, we need more background singers over here. That'll help. No, don't mess with perfect. Don't do it. That's all.
Tell us how you really feel.
It's if you expand, you're going to have to add another weekend, I assume, or you're going to have to make some team play three games in a week. I guess they could do that Tuesday, Wednesday, but where's the TV money in that?
Yeah, no, they're going to add more Tuesday, Wednesday, and we're going to get more True TV.
Where is the TV money in that?
I don't know.
That's another part of this too, right? Access, and I was going to get to the other part I never did, is obviously money.
Money. All right. I'm looking at this thing right now. The next four out, the four after that, I'm looking at Lenardi's next four out. And you guys know I can't stand that, like, we start the season and I just start with the next four out. I mean, like, I thought these people cared about the sanctity of the regular season. I mean, Villanova, Providence, and St. John's are on the next four out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Villanova Providence this year has
six
lost
and seven
to Penn,
in league.
Drexel, and
Villanova's 13-11.
Yeah.
St. John's is 14-11 and 6-8. The Big East is awesome, but, like, come on. I mean, even Rick Pitino's not going to be like, yeah, we do. This is unbelievable. I mean, you're going to expand it, and you're going to test the patience of the American public.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand gambling, but I guess you can expand a little and add another. I mean, what are we trying to do? Add eight more teams?
You could add 4, 8, or maybe 12, basically. You could have four first fours. Every region could have a first four, so to speak. You know, you'd have four sites where they play Tuesday, Wednesday, and you feed four more teams in from there. You know, that, or you could do one more site.
And you're hoping people will skip work. Like, the beauty is you skip, like, that's four straight days of that.
Yeah.
They cannot add a weekend.
No, that they don't want to do. Because you don't want to run into the Masters on the back end, and they like their conference tournaments on the front end. So. Which
it's just unnecessary, and how much more money is this?
Right.
They can't, I don't know. They can try to take the auto bids away, but that's going to be, like you said, politically difficult.
Yeah.
And let's face it, for the optics, the two of the worst leagues are generally historical black college leagues.
Uh huh.
Yeah, that's where the politics
come into
play.
That.
I think you would have issues.
And they always like, well, these guys they're not going to win the title. I don't really care what I just like that, of course, they're not going to win the title. But like that, like, you're reminded there's a thing called the Mississippi Valley State.
Right.
Like, it's like they're in. They get a shot. Who cares? The dream is just making it for those. We've all covered the small conference tournament.
They're awesome.
And they win, and that's their championship.
Yes.
And they go, and we're going to get you're going to get beat by Duke by 45 points. So what? I'm going to get to shake Mike Krzyzewski's hand or whatever. You know, like, I don't care.
Yeah, no. I'm going to be there in the tournament. I'm going to play. Yeah. We're going to play against
the big boys. And that's what they took from
them
with the Dayton stuff.
Yes.
It's not the same, you know?
Well, you hear a lot about, like, in the football world, you hear a lot from fans in us, in the media. We don't want college football to become some NFL-like thing. And this would be, right, we don't want basketball probably to become more like, quote, NBA, where it is just a certain group of 30 or 40 schools and the big brands and stuff. That's what partly makes, I think, college sports in general different, unique, and really fun, is that you do have these outliers programs, some of which can make a run. Right, we saw St. Peter's last year, right?
Oh, yeah, they'd love to boot St. Peter's.
Florida Atlantic was in the Final Four last year.
St. Peter's was, like, my wife watched the NCAA that year because of St. Peter's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The whole concept is what it got her interested. It made it all the way to she's watching the Final Eight, and, like, that was her team. And you lose that person. You cannot rely on the 2 million college basketball fans out there.
Right.
It's not enough. And so you got to get everybody in on it. It's a very very tricky expansion. The argument that there were missing good teams is,
it's specious.
No.
Come on.
The argument that there's that much more money, I don't know. Maybe. The argument that the people who invest the most should get the most back. Pound sand, man. Like, I mean, really? The reason half your league didn't make the tournament is because you expanded your league too big.
Yeah, right.
And
expanded your league too big and then chose to play 11 home games in November and December and one on a neutral site against a good team. And, oh, your strength of schedule isn't very good. And, then you went into conference play and went 7-11. Oh, they need to be in the tournament, really?
I guess
here's a couple.
Go ahead, Pat.
A couple other thoughts here. One, this has always been my argument. Everyone actually already has access to the tournament. You have a conference tournament that you can win. And when you win, you are in. All right? So there's an automatic bid that is available to every single team that plays in its conference tournament. And by the way, speaking of expansion, the ACC starting next year is not going to let everybody in their conference tournament because they got 18 and it's too many. So that's, again, that's on the Power 5 League. That's not on anybody else. Now, even if you don't win the conference tournament, if you're on the bubble and you win 3 games to get to the championship, you can play your way in. So this, you know, there's not enough access. There is access. There is opportunity. It's not supposed to be easy. It's not supposed to be a given that as long as you can muddle through your power league at 9-9, that you deserve to get a bid to the tournament. Whereas, you know, in these other places, as we have seen, and it's the best, it's life and death. And these kids that have their one chance and they're playing these really dramatic games and they're storming the court when they win and they're crying when they lose. That's why conference tournament basketball is great. Now, part of the argument for this whole thing has been, you know, percentage of access to the championship. Well, it's okay. If we got 36 at-large bids, that's only 1/10 of the membership because they keep expanding the membership, of course, in Division I. We're up to 362, I believe the number is now. 362. I know this. I can speak to that there are a total of 270 swimmers in the NCAA championships. That's a hell of a lot less than 10% of the competitors there. You know, you may get more than 10% of the teams because they get one swimmer somewhere who qualifies or one diver. But if you want to really break down the percentages, I'm not buying this. And again, win your conference championship.
Let me say this. That argument is completely intellectually dishonest, and they know it. That is a trick to fool the media.
Yep.
They don't care about the reason it's 10% is because the Metro Atlantic and the Ivy League and the, like, there's too many teams, but it's at the bottom.
Yeah.
You don't hear Florida International 8-16. You know, the Chicago State Cougars, who are independent. I had no idea. 11-18. Why is Chicago State named the Cougars? When was the last time a Cougar was running around Chicago? Got to come up with a better name than that.
Yeah, that one.
Oh, well, actually, I've been in a couple bars in Chicago. There were some Cougars working.
Cougars,
I take it back.
Bada-boom.
Gold Coast, the Gold Coast divorcees.
Lord.
Yeah, I don't think that was what they're going for, but they are ferocious.
I want to see that logo.
No, Chicago State Cougars 11-18, not bad for an independent, good season. It's so dishonest. The numbers are big because at the bottom those people are not complaining.
No,
these people are, they're like, give us one shot out of our league, maybe two if we have two teams. They're not complaining for more access. The people that are complaining about the access are the middle of the SEC and the Big Ten, where these teams aren't very good. And they muddle about, and their coaches are making $4 million, and they're complaining that they can't win, and they got all this stuff. So the percentage argument is crap. They're not trying to build representation from all of these leagues that don't have competitive, highly competitive basketball. and nobody in those leagues are crying that we need to expand the NCAA basketball tournament. They might cry occasionally that they should get a better shot at large, but last night, Detroit Mercy ended its 20, won the first game of the season. Do you see that?
Yeah, they were 0-26.
0-26. They win a game. Great. One guy. Did you see the court storm? One guy stormed the court.
One guy. Look, I'm proud that he was there and he stayed the whole game.
He's fired up. I mean, who knows how many games he's been to? If you sat through all 26, you listen on your radio and stuff. Hell yeah, we won one. I'm storming the court. One man court storm. They better not fine him. Like, imagine if they fined Detroit Mercy, be like, they go like, hey, Jerry, it's your fault, man. I mean, you owe us $5,000 to the Horizon League. Like, I thought everyone was coming. I thought we were streaking the quad, right? No, we weren't. We weren't. Anyway, that argument is garbage. That's just someone thought that little PR move up. Do not fall for it. It has nothing to do with the percentage. There is ample percentage of the major conferences that we care about getting in. It's not that hard to get in. And there's very little evidence that a team that just sat there and went, 6-10 in their league is going to make a run to the NCAA championship. So go ahead. That went in a lot of tangents, man.
No, but I mean, and they're all good tangents. It's all legitimate. And this is the kind of thing that to me, it is. It's just creeping gigantism. It is more give us what we want, screw the whole. And again, we're going to treat the fans and the consumers like suckers because we think they're just going to keep taking it. And if you get, I will say this, they stretch the boundaries of the bracket by just adding the first four, right? If you add more first fours and you cannot print out the bracket on a single page of paper or you can't look at it on a single computer screen, you have really screwed up because there's a lot of fans that don't give a damn other than filling out that bracket. They want to do it for their office pool, do it with their family, do it with their friends, do it in the dorm, whatever.
Even the printout. Even the printout bracket, old school, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. The printout or the on-screen. Those are the two. You've got to preserve those things. If you go bigger and you say, well, it no longer fits on a screen, you've screwed up.
It's tricky. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I just have one thing. In that story, that story's about a few other things that I'm sure we'll get to in a minute, but I wanted to bring up a quote. I couldn't get in there. At some point, I want to use it. It's a great quote from Michael Resco, the American. I quoted him in the story with some other things, but this is one I really couldn't fit in there. But it talks about the giants of the sport, as Pat just said, mentioned. I don't know what word did you use. What word did you use, Pat?
Gigantism. Gigantism. Okay,
this is exactly what he's talking about. So let me read it to you. I asked him about the SEC Big Ten joint advisory board and the potential for a breakaway if they don't get what they want with the CFP in the NCAA tournament. This is what he said. I think it's a shot over the bow. They have more clout. They're more aggressive when it comes to revenue. But George Will once wrote a column about the Getty Museum, and he said, the Getty could buy pretty much everything around it, but they decide not to because they don't think it's a good idea to have everything concentrated in one place. They make a conscious decision not to do that. Just like the NFL, they made a conscious decision not to have all the revenue with the big market teams. I hope that these two conferences, when we get down to the discussions, will realize that what's good for the entire enterprise is good for them too. That it's not good to concentrate too much clout and too much power. I hope the commissioners and the presidents realize that the whole enterprise needs to be healthy.
Good for Oresco.
The Getty Museum making a call.
The Getty Museum, yeah. I had to look that up. Yeah.
It's a
good quote, though. It makes a lot of sense. I think from five years from now or 10 years from now, I've had a lot of people say this to me recently, and I think they're really referring to this future, college athlete employment and paying athletes and blah, blah, blah. But they say, like, you know, 5 or 10 years from now, we're going to look back and go, where did college sports go? And I don't know. Maybe they're right.
I think these guys are like, they're like the old stadium designers of like the 1970s that would just build this mammoth cookie cutter stadium circle. And surround it. Yeah, circle, multi-purpose, and then surround it with like a mile of parking lot.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they controlled everything and they're like, look.
Right.
And then like eventually you figured out, like you were saying, hey, tuck it in this. Yeah, you might not own all the concession because there's a independent bar owner over here or this or that, or someone's going to be able to put some housing near you. Or you don't own that parking garage, but it becomes a better, right, better product. I feel like these guys are dragging us back. Like, here you go, park your car, walk in.
Pay us for the parking, walk into our charmless stadium. There's nothing nearby.
No bar district. We control it all, and it's kind of like that. But yeah, we've now had Getty Museum, Gold Coast bars. I mean, we're all over.
We might get back to slap fighting eventually.
All right. Well, we'll be back. Maybe. Never know. We'll be back right after this message. All right. Not content at possibly expanding the men's basketball tournament. They're already talking about expanding the football playoff, Ross. We don't have the football playoff yet.
No, we don't. We don't. We haven't played one game of the expanded playoff. Yeah, we haven't played a single game. So, yeah, you know, that was, there were three parts of that story I wrote earlier this week of the NCAA tournament expansion and the CFP part and then the future of NCAA governance and athlete compensation stuff. In the CFP, that situation, you know, we've talked about quite a bit. I think the latest on that situation is, and I'll equate it to the NCAA tournament situation too. So in the NCAA tournament, you've got the five Power Five commissioners, let's say four now, and they are lobbying the NCAA to expand the NCAA tournament. That's what they want. The CFP part of this, you've got the two Power Two, the Big Ten and SEC, lobbying the other conferences, the other FBS conferences, to potentially expand the CFP, but definitely change the revenue distribution model so they can have more money. So you got these two things going on, and you've got fights between, there's a little different dynamics, but in general, it's the same. Access and money, right? Everybody wants more access and more money. So right now we're in the middle, and I think they meet again on Tuesday in Dallas, the CFP commissioners. I don't necessarily expect news out of that meeting, but they will meet to further discuss a future revenue distribution format. And at some point, maybe the actual format comes up. It hasn't really come up seriously in meetings yet, but there is a sense that built into whatever new contract they sign will not only be a new revenue distribution model, but will be a potential change to a format, allowing them to change the format from 12 to 14 or 16 or something like that down the line, or eliminate AQs in general. These are very similar conversations. It's very similar issues, just different people, a different group or a smaller group wanting something. And so in addition to all this CFP mess, right, is what we had earlier this week, and that's Washington State President Kirk Schulz, who's on the CFP Board of Managers, coming out finally and speaking and talking about format. The CFP trying to move from a 6+6 format to a 5+7. We talked about it on the show quite a bit. It's been multiple times it was supposed to have been adopted and done. The latest time last month, Kirk Schulz, because it needs to be unanimous, Kirk Schulz delayed the vote. He's going to pitch a proposal next week to presidents before they vote on the move. He's going to pitch a proposal for the Pac-12 to remain a Power Five conference with Power Five revenue from the CFP in voting rights. That's what he wants. He's kind of got the leverage right now to do it because they need his vote to change this format. If they don't change the format, we're in a 6+6 the next 2 years, which means the second best group of five champion gets into the field, you know, potentially over like a whatever. This year would have been like a 10-2 Ole Miss would have been left out for SMU or Liberty or something like that. So that's kind of where we stand on the CFP situation. But I'm fascinated because these two situations, the NCAA tournament future, CFP future, are exactly alike. Like, we're talking about access and money for the most powerful conferences in these two events, you know, and that's what's happening right now.
They talk about the wild, wild west. This is Kirk Schultz playing Jesse James on the train robbery, right?
Yeah.
He's standing in front of the tanks in Tiananmen Square. I'm going with that one.
No, I just want
fight
his money.
Power.
That guy had
fight
like courage. Power. He had courage. He was fighting for an ideal. Schultz just wants money.
Well,
I don't
welcome
blame
to
him.
College athletics. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, beyond 25, they're going to need money.
Yeah. Not say it's a bad thing. I'm saying he wants money. He can be bought off. That guy in front of the tank couldn't be bought off.
No.
Schultz just like, give me the gold. Shame something happened to your little tournament.
One of the one college administrator, after I made that analogy on the last part of the one before that, accused me of being a socialist, which I am not, but I still admire. I admire the moxie of Kirk Schultz saying there will be a tax for ruining my athletic department.
Standing up to the Chinese government makes you a socialist. Jeez. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I mean, I get fatigued with the leaders of college sports constantly, you know, this constant quest for more. And I would sure like to see the 12-team playoff actually perform before we decide we need a bigger playoff. Can we have a couple of years of that at least and then decide if we want to screw it up a little bit more and add more games? Let's see something happen and enjoy it without thinking, how can we make more money from it?
I want to see it in play. Maybe it isn't too small. And obviously you can expand it easily by going to 16 by just making the one seeds play 1, 2, 3, 4. I once proposed that. I'm not necessarily opposed to it, but when I proposed that I had all 11 leagues get an automatic bid. So the at-large pool was still only 5. So it's pretty similar to what we have at the 12. What they basically said by going to 12 was we don't need to give all of the group. And I would agree with that. Also, the middle level leagues got like the WAC, Mountain West, Conference USA. Those leagues were good back then. But now, you know, your TCUs, your SMUs, your UCFs, your Cincinnati's, they're all in major conferences now. So I think 12 is the right number. I don't think we don't need more games. I just want to see. Let's see. Because we may sit there and say, yeah, you're right. We need to go bigger. Or you might sit there and go, yeah, 12's enough and might even be too many. I don't know. But the idea that they're not even – I mean, these are the people that have clung to the sanctity of the bowl game. You know, the bowl trip. We need to make sure the bowl trip. We got to help our guys in the bowl industry for decades. And now all of a sudden they're like, yeah, we can't even wait to see what happens here.
Yeah, that's starting to wane. That's starting to definitely wane. But when you talk to administrators, even coaches now, and certain commissioners, the certainly the mid-tier to lower tier bowls, it's getting more feeling that they're just kind of brushing them aside. And I haven't run some of the comments yet, but Kirk Schultz talked about that and how concerned he would be if the playoff goes beyond 12, how concerned he would be for the bowl system. And rightfully so, that there are already going to be issues with 12 with the bowl system. I think you will have teams that, you know, we've seen it already the last few years, but we've certainly seen a lot of players bail, but you might have just full teams bail, right, on playing in a bowl game if they don't make the playoff. And I think that's a very real concern from people when it comes to going beyond 12. I should say, again, the expanding the format of 12, expanding the teams in the playoff, that has not been seriously discussed from what I understand in the room, but in private conversations, and I think the Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti's maybe more supportive of that than anybody, that he has held conversations with at least expanding the field or at the very least changing the AQ situation as well.
Of course, they like the idea of changing the AQ situation. I, you know, and I think there's some people that will definitely push for no AQs.
Yes.
And we just, yeah, we just.
The SEC pushed for that a couple years ago.
Yeah,
when they,
right.
You know, they were.
We just select the 12 best teams. And by God, then strength of schedule is going to matter. Or at least the commissioners will want it to matter. The commissioners of two conferences will want it to matter. Probably four, at least three. Because theoretically, I would think the Big 12 will have good strength of schedule as well. Not as good as the Big 10 or the SEC, but still, you know, I think that there was going to be a lot more talk about strength of schedule in this new format and whatever comes after the new format, I would imagine.
Well, they need money, and one reason is because the Power Five spent $2.3 million last year lobbying Congress. $2.39 million, according to Sportico.
ACC, the hurt, poor ACC, $1 million, spent the most of any league lobbying Congress.
Spent $2.4 million, and all we got were five useless congressional hearings. No wonder all these politicians, oh, we're working on it. Drafting a bill night and day here. Meeting with
Cory
Booker.
Let's have another hearing.
They have private, closed-door meeting between the bipartisan. They just go in there and laugh at the money. Like, you believe these suckers gave us $100,000? Can't figure it out. Congress, I mean, they see a sucker walking. Why do you got to pay $2.4 million for these people to look at this? Government should just do it. It's a sad part. But anyway, guess we don't need that money. They give... It's spending is up. ACC's way up. Everybody's up. They got a handy chart here at Sportico. Although it's kind of confusing. Bar graph. I don't like bar graphs. Yeah, and red. Yeah, Big 12 gave less. Big 12's like, screw it. That's it. All right. Anyway, that's where we are in our expansion plans. I want to get to this because we have a opening. Georgia State opened. But we're going to get to – we'll discuss Georgia State in a moment. Sean Elliott has left from the head coach to be the assistant coach at South Carolina, run game coordinator and tight end coach. He left after 7 years, maybe eight, at Georgia State as its head coach. He left 2 days into spring practice. Guardrails. The coach left. Bro, where you at? Said practice this morning.
Yeah.
He's gone. Entered the
transfer
portal.
Can you imagine that team meeting? Cranking up day three of spring, coach walks in. Hey, guys, I'm leaving.
I can't hack. These this generation now, they won't hack it through the tough times.
They won't build.
There's no loyalty. They're getting tampered with. They're taking the money and better opportunity. 2 days into practice, coach quits to become assistant. Okay. Give another $2.4 million to Congress, please. Please do it. Thanks. Good God.
Yeah, Eddie. Coach. Hey, we got mandatory lift, 5:30 a.m. mandatory run at 7. I'm leaving at 8. I'll talk to you guys.
I got a staff meeting at 9. That's not on the schedule, Coach. It's in Columbia, South Carolina.
Yeah.
I gotta get this flight here, the Delta 755 out.
The separation have never been greater between the group of five and the Power Five.
That's
obvious.
So we've seen both the head coaches of Buffalo and Troy this year went to Alabama.
Buffalo and South Alabama.
South Alabama, not Troy. I'm sorry. South Alabama and Buffalo went to Alabama. Last year we saw the head coach at Kent State go to Colorado, and then he became the head coach at San Diego State this year. I think it's a resume play as much as anything else, but I'm sure it's a little more fun being assistant. Like, these assistant jobs are pretty good gigs, man. You're making a lot of money. And, Elliott's 50 years old. He obviously has a ton of head coaching experience. 7-6 last year, had an 8-win season. But that might not be the way you get. If he wants a Power 5 head coaching job, a couple years at, if South Carolina gets cracking, then maybe your resume's better. And maybe your lifestyle is better than trying to survive at Georgia State. I don't know why Sean Elliott did it.
Yeah. There's a little something different. There's a little more context with, as we're starting to learn, with
it's a South Carolina guy too.
Yeah, he's a South Carolina guy. Not only that, his family, at least as of like I think a year ago or so, his family had still lived in Columbia, and he was splitting time between Atlanta and in Columbia, South Carolina. So there's a little more sense made to, again, it's kind of like the Chip Kelly move. A lot of people made a big deal out of it, and I get it. It was somewhat unprecedented. We haven't seen it a lot, but there is like an individual circumstances situation with some of these jobs. But to me, overall, and Dan mentioned it, you know, I think group of five coaches are starting to realize that they have a better chance if they just get into that Power Five level of getting a Power Five head coaching job. It used to kind of be like, you know, you want head coaching experience somewhere. So you go to the G5 because that's where you can get it. And then you get promoted up to a lower level, a mid-tier Power Five. And then you get promoted up to maybe if you do have success to a high level Power Five job and, you know, and then NFL onto that, et cetera, et cetera. And it just seems like something's changed there over the last few years. It seems like, and part of it to me is the gap has grown between the Group of Five and the Power Five in winning consistently at the Group of Five level and getting players, NIL, transfer portal, all this stuff, is getting more difficult. I remember when Todd Berry, the AFCA executive director, this was like 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, when NIL first started and then transfer movement when they allowed players to transfer immediately once, you know, and play immediately, transfer once and play immediately. I remember him saying, watch G5, it's going to be a farm system. And if you talk to people in the G5 and in the Power Five right now, guess what? G5 is a farm system in a lot of ways. It's been a farm system for the Power Five. They don't have the NIL resources. And when Power Five comes calling, a lot of times they do take their best players. And I'm sure that's frustrating for a lot of Group of Five coaches. I'm sure that is frustrating, and it makes it harder to win, thus makes it harder to maybe move up. And I think a lot of them are starting to realize, hey, I got a better chance if I just be on staff at the Power Five level.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, there is a gap of what can be done and what's possible that is growing, and we have seen that, just the resource difference. What a guy you can get paid as much or more to be a coordinator at a lot of P5 jobs as you can make as the head coach at a G5 with fewer headaches. And if you just want to coach ball, which I talked to somebody who knows Chip Kelly the other day, and he said that Chip feels like he has not coached enough ball, and this is a chance to do that with fewer headaches. But I talked to a G5 AD for quite a while at the NCAA convention last month, and I was like, "What's your NIL situation?" He kind of scoffed. He said, "We don't have it." He said, "You know, we might be able to get a couple star guys like some meals, and you know, maybe put them in an ad in the program or something or wherever, but you know, we simply don't have it. And we do have some players that are good enough to play at that next level where they're going to get taken care of better." So he said, you know, we absolutely have no means to compete in that area.
Yeah. G5, you're basically rebuilding your team on the fly, particularly basketball.
Yeah.
But the beauty of that is you could see a one-win team get 20 wins in 1 year. You see these amazing turnarounds, but then you're going to get plucked apart. So it is a tougher job.
Well, and the G5 group has been pretty significantly weakened over the years because of realignment. You know, the best teams, the highest revenue producing teams, the teams in the G5 that would have NIL and resources, the Houstons, the UCFs, they're gone now, you know? Yeah. And not only that, the replacements for those teams are coming from FCS, right? So the Group of Five is weakened, and it is why two things. It's why commissioners definitely want this 5-7, 5-7 format, not 6-6. Because again, second best G5 team would be in a playoff. So number one, and number two, they're putting a moratorium, right? The commissioners on two things. I don't want to call it a moratorium. One is a moratorium, one is not. There's a moratorium now on teams that move from G5 to P5 in getting Power 5 CFP money distribution. That's stopping. It's stopping with SMU. They're not even getting a full share. So they're trying to stop that. The other thing they're trying to stop is, you guys remember, I think we talked about it on the pod last year. It cost $5 million to go from FCS to FBS. The entry fee to FBS went from $5,000 to $5 million. They're trying to stop that as well. They're trying to stop this movement.
They're scared of more UMass Minutemen, and I don't blame them. It's a fearsome, it's a threat to the balance of power out there.
Tarleton State's coming for you, man.
Tarleton State. No, all right. A hire that we did not get to yet, I think, pound for pound. We talked last time about how you have no idea if anyone's going to succeed. We went through the class of 2018 coaching carousel, and there were all these no-brainers. Scott Frost to Nebraska, Jimbo Fisher to Texas A&M, Chip Kelly to UCLA. None of them worked out. Many others. You have no idea. So we don't do a lot of, we don't do the grades. We don't do, at least I don't, because you will be surprised. You don't know who these guys are. You don't know what's going to factor in. You don't know how motivated they are. You don't know anything. I will say this, though, built on resume, I'm surprised this is not getting more of these like A's. Boston College hired Bill O'Brien. And if you consider it's Boston College, I don't know how they do better as a hire on paper. You know Alabama's going to get a good coach. They're going to have the pick of the litter. Boston College is not. This is a very difficult job. They just hired a guy who went 15-9 under literally unprecedented circumstances at Penn State. Held a bunch of recruiting. I think is well-regarded still in Pennsylvania. Became an NFL head coach and won 4 division titles. In 2 stints worked at the New England Patriots, could mean Tom Brady's coach. Universal name recognition in football, particularly in New England. Was the coach for Bryce Young to win a Heisman Trophy, become a number one draft pick. And he's the Boston College coach. He's from Boston. He went to St. John's Prep. He's in the Catholic Conference. He has ties all over New England. Why are people not like, hey, man, BC killed it on this, getting Bill O'Brien. Where am I getting this wrong? Is this people just don't like Bill O'Brien or something? Like, how do you do better when you're Boston College than getting this? He seems overqualified for this job.
Yeah, because they've done a lot worse recently. I agree. I mean, I think it's a home run. You know, it's just because it's been a while since he's been around the college game. But, I mean, he was good with the Texans, too. 4 playoff appearances.
2 playoff victories. Like,
yeah, yeah. You know, this is a guy that knows what he is doing and probably is pretty hungry to get a chance back again as a head coach. A little bit different environment, obviously, but he's not dumb. He can figure it out. And, yeah, who do you think Boston College is going to get? Frank Spaziani, they had him. He was 22-29. Steve Adazio, oh, that was a good one, 44-44. Jeff Hafley, 15-20. That's your last 3 guys there, and that goes back to 2008. So the track record is that Boston College is a low end of the Power 5 job, and I don't think Bill O'Brien is a low end of Power 5 head coach.
He seems like a home run. And I think, you know, from the very start of their search, and kudos, they talked to a lot of people during the search and made a whole process of it. But he just seemed like the guy from the very start, and certainly the number one guy. And it makes a ton of sense. But good luck, Bill O'Brien, because I think, as we've discussed plenty, you know, talk about the gap between the P5s and G5s we just talked about. You know, there's a growing gap within the Power 5. And, you know, BC's not in that, you know, even mid-tier, I would imagine, you know, resource-wise. And they're in a league that seems to be slowly breaking apart. So It's a tough job, but if anybody can have success, you got to think it's someone like that with the connections and the kind of the homegrown nature of it all.
Yeah, like I said, I have no idea, but I wouldn't have any idea if they hired anybody. And I'm not saying they're going to win the national title, but 8 wins, those kind of things. BC has been good through the years when it has quarterbacks. Most recently, Matt Ryan. It's famously Doug Flutie, but that's a whole different era of the sport. BC is the type of school that a pro-style quarterbacks, you can get a quarterback to Boston College. You're not going to get, the most menacing defensive line. You're up in Boston. It's not those guys aren't laying around. But there are quarterbacks around New England or somewhere. Or you can get them on the bounce when they transfer in. It's hard to get guys to transfer in. That's it. One thing about BC and the transfer portal, yeah, they'll leave maybe. But kids that choose Boston College, it's a little like Duke or State. Like you choose it because that's the kind of school you want to go to. Right, it's not a cookie cutter situation where it's like I'm just going to the biggest program. He should be able to attract, and that's what I'll be watching. Really good quarterback, and he should be able to coach a quarterback and an offense. He coached with Tom Brady, Sean Watson, Bryce Young, all these guys. So that would be my thing: is if he can get a high end quarterback, that changes. And that should be the blueprint for Boston College. So I don't know if Boston College is going to all of a sudden storm off and be the greatest team. But on paper, this is good. And I would not be surprised if they become, I think what most people at Boston College would hope for is a non-embarrassing team and one that wins, can we win 8 games? Can we go 8-4? That'd be pretty good. Maybe every once in a while beat a team we shouldn't beat at home. That'd be pretty much what we're asking for.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Thomas Castellanos is still there as the BC quarterback, and he's not a quintessential pro-style pocket quarterback, but if you want to walk into a situation and have a guy who's a pretty good college player, like 35, 400 yards and 28 total touchdowns, he threw for 2,200, he ran for over 1,000, a good dual threat guy to start with, you could do worse than that. And then, yes, let him recruit to his strengths, and I think you're at least going to have a chance to compete in a league where, frankly, outside of when Florida State and Clemson are on their games, they're probably going to be at the top, but after that it's fairly open, especially if Miami continues to underachieve, Virginia Tech stays dormant. I mean, Louisville has risen up, but I don't think anybody looks at Louisville and says you're going to win 10 every year there. So it's a fluid league with a good coach. You might have a chance to at least have some good years.
All right, People's Court, airline edition.
Uh-oh.
Maybe I'm still scarred from trying to get through McCarran International, or what are they, Harry Reid now they're calling it. What happened to McCarran? Did he get knocked
McCarran's
off?
McCarran's out. I don't know. Vegas, in Vegas, baby. People get knocked off. Yeah.
Yeah, it happens. I don't know what happened there. Credit for the honesty with this woman. She's a author from Vancouver named Joanna Chu, I believe, Chiu. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. I mispronounce a lot of names. She detailed on Twitter here, on social media, quote, just got kicked off a WestJet flight from Mexico because I had an upset stomach and was going to the washroom too much before takeoff. The plane hadn't even left, and she was continually going to the bathroom. No promise of a hotel or rebook flight. I had meds and was on the mend. Some customer service. If you're sick before a flight, she gives a little advice, hold it in.
Easier said than done.
Yeah, right. There's some things that...
Hold it in. Okay.
Hold it in. She then complained that she left her money with some travel companions as she was getting thrown off the flight. 2 questions. At what point are you alarmed at the number of times someone has gone to the washroom when the flight hasn't taken off? What is that over-under number? And B, did the flight attendants, whoever made this call, did they make the right call in saying, listen, you got to stay here. We ain't flying. I don't know where she, Mexico to where. I do not know. You're going to have to sort this thing out on your own. And then when whatever's going on has gone on, you can get back on this flight. Pat 40, what is the system here?
Okay, so over under on acceptable pre-flight bathroom runs is 1.5. And I could almost go half there because I think you take care of your business. Yeah, well, you take care of your business before you get on the plane. Okay. Remember, let's preface this. I tend to be a hanging judge with flights, right? I don't want animals on there, and I don't want people pooping in the aisle, which I think this woman would be a clear threat for that.
Yeah.
And the pilots and the flight attendants, they've all read the stories about the people pooping in the aisle. They don't want that on their watch. I say you err on the side of the greater good for everyone on the flight, and you tell that lady, sorry, yes, you sit this one out until you get your innards in order.
Yes, you just hold it in. I don't know how often she was running back and forth to the bathroom before the flight went off. I know our flight took off. I know that sometimes it frustrates me when you board a plane, everybody boards a plane, and they're like, sit your ass down, we're trying to take off, and people are like going back and forth to the bathroom. It's like, we're just at the airport. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So that's frustrating to begin with. I question how much she was going back and forth, because when you got to go, you got to go. I get it. I get that, I guess. But I agree with Pat here. Judge 40.
The world should always agree with Judge.
Okay, Judge Anderson.
Was she coming from the window seat?
Yes. Thank you.
The real question.
If she was in the aisle, that's maybe we could figure something out. If it's window seat, you got to get off the plane. Yeah, we can't do the rigmarole the entire flight. I feel terrible for you, but you might have to get off.
Fair point. Fair 100% point.
100% agree. I mean, that's why I don't like Justice 40's a half. If you're the inside, okay, you fly in L.A. to New York and you're the inside guy, I want last of the last. Relieve yourself and sit in that seat. And don't be tapping me when I'm sleeping. And don't walk in with like a 25-ounce Starbucks and go, I can't sleep. And I gotta. No kidding. Plan ahead, people. We have tightened up. I have additional information that will absolutely, they made the right call.
Okay.
By February 11th. First off, I believe this was a Mexico to Vancouver flight. So as an American, I want that NAFTA deal going right over. I don't need an emergency landing because something happened. Hi, everyone. I'm home safe and sound. There continued to be an unfortunate series of events involving urgent care treatment.
Oh boy.
But I'm okay now.
Oh, man.
Really was my fault not realizing I had to be extra careful this year. Is this a year of a dragon? She brought up the
Chinese New Year.
Yeah, the Chinese Zodiac year.
The year of the dragon.
And touch a nap.
The dragon got her, huh?
Happy Lunar New Year. She said, I'm getting myself a bubble suit.
What? The bubble boy? Like bubble the bubble suit. Boy?
I don't know. She said, bubble suit. In the future, check whether your destination is known for stomach bugs. So,
what?
She should apologize for WestJet. Small sample Heisman of the WestJet flight crew for recognizing.
Yeah. Yes. There you go. Very good, WestJet.
She said that someone asked, how many times did you go to the washroom? And she said, if you go, they will ask you, are you sick? And you should tell them you just have a small bladder. I've never been asked, am I sick? So was probably a total mess.
I am almost 100% sure I've never gone before a flight took off. But again, that's preparation. But yeah, look, if she's... if she's pawning this off on the Chinese New Year,
you're the dragon.
Very suspicious.
A bubble suit. I want to hear more about this bubble suit. Hopefully, she purchases this bubble suit in opines about it online, because I want to know more if this is like a
bubble
boy
like
situation or what.
She seems to like to opine online.
Can
like,
smell,
why are you even talking about this?
Can smell like seep through the bubble suit? What is this? You just, is this really the solution? You just keep going and then you have to sit in it?
I don't know. Oh, come on now. Come on.
I got to read this book this woman wrote, because this is crazy. I don't know. This looks
What's
very
the title
pleasant.
Of her book? Do we know?
I don't know. I just deleted her thing. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't. It was. I don't know. It's about China. It's about China.
Okay.
So she knows a lot. She's like very pleasant in her picture. I just don't know what's going on. All right. One more final one. This is just ungodly. Daily Mail has finally given up on the Princess Kate. Watch and started covering some real news. They have not given up, by the way. A Delta flight was forced to turn back an hour after takeoff. This is an Amsterdam to Detroit flight.
Mm.
So that's a good 8 hours.
That's it, yeah.
After maggots.
Oh,
what?
No.
Maggots fell from the overhead cabin onto terrified economy passengers.
My God.
It was compelled
Ross
to return.
Is invisible distress right now, by the way.
A suitcase containing rotten fish was in the overhead bin.
Oh, my God.
It broke open. How? I don't know.
How?
Maggots began to fall on the unsuspecting passengers below. Obviously, those passengers could not stay in their seat. There was nowhere to sit. They had, for safety reason, they had to return. Passengers were taken off board. The cabin was thoroughly, quote unquote, cleaned.
Oh.
And the suitcase was placed in a bag to be burned.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Burn the whole plane, Dan.
Yeah.
They identified the owner of the rotting suitcase and detained them.
Mm.
We don't know if there's criminal charges. There is a I have so much. Everyone was given 8,000 air miles, hotel compensation, and a $30 meal ticket. They're delayed overnight. Firmly not eating fish. My family and I were in the row directly in front of the maggots. there's a line you never want to speak. The lady right behind us told the flight attendant the maggots were falling on her head. I turned around and they're wiggling around the seat.
No, okay. Okay, we get the point, Dan.
Okay, the real question
is this: coming back from Amsterdam or going to Amsterdam?
Yeah,
coming back.
Oh, of course, somebody was trying. They're known for their fish there, right? Somebody was trying to bring fish back. Come on, man, this is crazy.
So they thought the fish wouldn't rot really quickly. Have they ever caught a fish? It smells like within like 5 minutes.
Yes,
right.
Yeah. You got to pack it with salt, like those people in Amsterdam do. Yeah.
If you go out on a little teeny lake and catch a fish and pull it in and it's there and you're going to keep it, it will smell by the time you get back to the dock. What?
Right, yes.
What? Again, people. We have to be better.
Yeah.
People of Earth, what are we doing? A suitcase of rotting fish? That is not what the overhead bin is for. I didn't think I'd have to mention this.
The person that was detained, he needs life in prison.
Absolutely.
Like, with no parole. This is a violation of the Geneva Convention, I am sure, and many other international laws.
The trial is at The Hague. Is that where they do it?
Yes.
Ungodly. Sean, I'll give you one more on this.
I think the passenger, he should have just lined up and had to fight everybody. I just one after another line it up. Me personally, I might have to DB Cooper the situation, find it, just get off that plane somehow. I can't sit on the plane with the bugs. That's too much. It's too unsettling. This gentleman should never be able to fly in a plane again.
How about line up and you get power slapped? It's power slap league. You don't get to slap back. All 200 people just get to line up and whale you.
I'd feel
vindicated. One smack. If maggots are dropping in my head, I get a freebie. Yeah.
It's bad. Ugh. I will say, if for those who listen, if you need the video of Ross recoiling at this, it's on YouTube.
Oh. Not a maggot person.
Who is, frankly?
It's like snakes on a plane, maggots on a plane. I might rather snakes.
Yeah. I didn't the bag smell anyway? How did it break open? I have so many questions. Yeah, that's
very suspicious, frankly. Bags don't break open.
The fish were alive and they were like flopping around. It's just terrible. All right. Well, all right. That's our show. We want to, unfortunately, with heavy heart, say this is the, I think it's the last show, if not, it's close to it, of the, where we have producer Sean Anderson, who we love. Very, very disappointed to be losing him, at least for a little while. Thank you for your service, Sean. You can hear his witty college football banter on Hack City Pod. What else, Sean? Is that that's your main show?
Yeah, and then socials would be at Sanderson Radio.
At Sanderson Radio.
Yeah.
Excellent work and service for us.
Absolutely.
Yes, very good.
Great, great producer, reliable on our psycho schedules, and funny as hell.
Funny as hell. Made this show a lot better, and we hope you're part of it again in the future, but... Next week, no, right? You're done?
One more week with the pod.
Oh, one more. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Good. All right. Yeah. You're not going to call in sick on us?
No, I don't think so.
All right. All right, we got one more week.
Stories.
One more week. Justice Anderson. Anyway, Hack City Pod. All right, so I said goodbye too early. Better than too late. Better than too late.
Right.
Continue to subscribe. Share us on social media. Appreciate everybody listening. We will talk to you next week.